It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Welcome, everyone, to Forward Thinking, the audio podcast. My name is Jonathan Strickland. I'm one of the three amazing hosts of this show.
Hi, I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick.
They are equally amazing, but modest. Today, we wanted to talk a little bit more about autonomous cars. And for people who haven't heard the previous episodes or maybe aren't familiar with the subject, Joe, why don't you kind of explain what an autonomous car is?
An autonomous car is basically exactly what it sounds like. It's a car that is autonomous, which means that it drives itself. So you get up in the morning and you get ready for work and you go out and you hop in your car and you close the door and you pop out a book and start to read. And the car takes you to work without any control or input from you. You don't need to have your hands on the steering wheel. You don't need to have your foot on the brakes. You don't need to be watching the traffic and you know, managing your chance to get out here on the road. The car drives itself. And this sounds like an amazing, wonderful, beautiful future to people like me.
Yeah.
Because I hate navigating traffic. Mm-hmm. And if I could just get in a car and sit down and read a book on the way to work, that I can't tell you how much I would love that.
Yeah, as someone who does not drive, that might be a surprise to some people, but I don't drive. I would welcome a robot car overlord into my life happily so that I could get around without having to either take a very long walk to the closest train station, which I do. I mean, that's not terrible. There are worse things to have to do. Or I would have to depend upon the kindness of my friends who would give me a ride. And I really don't like doing that because I don't want them to have to go out of their way just for me, right?
So sure.
I'm also very much looking forward to this where I could have potentially a car I could just jump into and say, hey, take me to such and such. And the only one who's, you know, inconvenienced is a robot. And who cares about them?
Right, right. I'm a little bit dubious about it, honestly. I mean, I'm excited about the prospect because, you know, we live in Atlanta. We don't really have terrific public transportation, which is normally the kind of place where you can hop in a vehicle and read a book and not have to worry about the actual controlling the vehicle part. But at the same time, I would need a lot of research and possibly anti-anxiety medication to give up that kind of control to a robot that, you know, I don't know that robot. I don't know where it matriculated.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, now that's something we really wanted to talk about in this podcast is there are people who might have anxiety issues about giving up control. That's perfectly legitimate. I'm not going to, you know, disparage people who have that. I have my own hang-ups, obviously. I mean, I don't drive, and the reason I don't drive is because I get severe anxiety behind the wheel of a car. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with someone who gets severe anxiety with the idea of no one being behind the wheel of the car. But beyond that, we also have, especially in America, but I imagine in other parts of the world as well, this sort of relationship between the idea of driving a car and the whole concept of free will and taking charge of your life and being able to have the freedom to go wherever you want, whenever you want. And there are some views of the autonomous car that seem to suggest that you can't have one and the other, that you, by having the autonomous car model, you give up this part of what it is to be part of the car culture. And in America in particular, car culture is a big deal. We met before the podcast to kind of talk this over. And Lauren, you made a really good point. If you don't have a car in America, you don't have a whole lot of options of getting around, especially on the longer distances.
Yeah, there's lots of places in Europe have really great trains that can take you very fast anywhere that you want to go. Or you know, if you happen to live in New York City or San Francisco or a place that has a really good metro, then that's terrific. But here in America, we've kind of built our country from the end of World War II on this concept of cars, of the individual motor vehicle and just getting in and going. And it's this very sexy, very stylized, filmic, epic idea.
Yeah, it's all about the individual. I mean, that's, again, another very American kind of idea is
sure.
That, you know, put that focus on the individual.
And people have a relationship with their cars too, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
A lot of that seems to come from the act of driving, that you're mm-hmm. spending so much time really manipulating this vehicle. You know, you're using all the controls on it and stuff like that. I mean, people name their cars.
Oh yeah, I've named my car. I mean, you know, and I do enjoy driving. You know, I'm not in traffic. I enjoy driving perhaps at night when there's no one else on the road. But
yeah, see, I can't even imagine that. To me, the idea of enjoying driving, I mean, I understand where people are coming from with it, but it's something I don't identify with at all on a personal level. And you're exactly right, Joe. I mean, when you spend that much time manipulating something, you can't help but form an emotional attachment to it. My wife and I are a perfect example of that. She spent years manipulating me, and clearly the emotional ties are tight.
Or like the weighted companion cube. I mean, I love that cube, okay?
That's another good point. Yeah, and I'm making light of it, but no, it really is true. There are relationships with these vehicles. And I think part of the problem some people have with the idea of the autonomous car is they seem to think that we're going to enter into a world where we no longer have any control. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think that there's always going to be at least a fail-safe option to switch to manual control. And because of that, I think that in order to be behind the wheel of an autonomous car, now, even if it's in autonomous mode, you would have to be a licensed driver. I can't imagine we ever get to a point where it will be all right for a group of human beings to get into a vehicle, none of whom have a license, and just go.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know, I kind of hope that someday the technology gets to that point, because how wonderful would it be for someone who is physically or visually impaired, or, you know, who suffered from strokes or for any other reason was not capable of getting a driver's license. It would be completely fabulous to have cars for that segment of the
sure.
population.
Yeah, they have way more autonomy over their own lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be great. But, you know, it's right now the technology is certainly not anywhere near there yet, and everything is very much so, like, you could read a book, but maybe you want to be paying attention to what the car is doing, just
yeah,
in case something
yeah.
goes terribly, terribly wrong.
Right, yeah. Right now, I would say that we're pretty far along in the prototype stage. Obviously, we're not very far into seeing it roll out into cars that consumers would have access to. But in the prototype stage, we've already seen cars manipulate their ways through various cityscapes, particularly things like San Francisco. I mean, Google has their fleet of autonomous cars that they've been working on for a couple of years, and they've been going through Mountain View, California, which is right there around the San Francisco area. That can be a pretty congested part of the United States. So they've already started to prove themselves, and I think there was only been a couple of accidents that have involved the Google cars, and when you look at them in comparison to the number of accidents that happen with human drivers, it's tiny right now, and we would imagine that that number would go lower even more as the technology advances and gets even more precise. I think we're going to have some people definitely put up a bit of a resistance to the idea of adapting to autonomous cars, and maybe we do eventually reach a future where it's the only way you can buy a car is if it's an autonomous car, unless it's maybe on the used car market.
Well, I mean, it may someday just be a safety issue, right?
Sure.
You can imagine a future where we have a member of Congress standing up in front of the House, you know, pointing at a chart. This many percentage of accidents are caused by human error. We know that right now, what do they say, about 95%?
Yeah, 90 to 95. All depends on the survey you read. But
sure. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says about 95%.
Yeah, that's the overwhelming majority of accidents have human error as at least a contributing factor.
These human drivers are a menace. Yeah. They are. I mean, they threaten all of us.
Uh-huh.
Let's take them out of the equation and put robots in charge. Yeah, I mean, that sort of thing could happen. I imagine that it would be very difficult for any politician to float that by, because they have to answer to their constituents. Like, it's hard for me to imagine an America where people are willingly giving up that ability to drive. And Joe, you brought up another good point about how this could affect people who tinker with cars, who like to manipulate cars. I mean, what happens when we get to a point where the cars are so advanced that they are beyond the ken of your average hobbyist mechanic?
Oh, yeah. A good friend of mine, he has an old Mercedes from the 70s, and he takes it apart and puts it back together all the time. You know, he's always working on it. I somehow doubt that that's something that you could have the same level of confidence doing with a car that requires all this intense computing. And
I think that eventually it's going to turn into the kind of issue where that's going to be the realm of hobbyists. I mean, much the same way that these days I have a Civic, y'all. I mean, like I take it to a mechanic who I trust, and I have no idea how that car works, quite honestly. And, you know, for people like your friend, they could probably still, you know, find the parts and put together their car and maybe take it out to... You can rent time at a track right now if you want to go out and race your car. That would be pretty silly for me, but because I can get it all up to all of, like, 95 miles an hour. But not that I would know that from driving on my city
streets. After 88, it really starts to shake. But if you can ease it past 93, it's smooth sailing.
But no, it's just going to, I would suspect, enter the realm of hobby.
Yeah.
Will we see a convergence of the auto shop tinkerer and the computer hacker?
That's a possibility. I mean, you know, again, when you're talking about something that is so important when it comes to the safety of the person who's sitting there, I mean, there are two arguments to have, right? There's the argument of you shouldn't mess with it because it could mean that you're risking your life. The other argument is, who's to say that the hacker isn't better at designing a system that is safe than the company is? Because we've seen hackers design things that ended up making huge improvements to products. And so it's an argument it's being made in all sorts of industries, but I'm sure in the car industry it'll be way up there, because you're talking about something that's not just a symbol of freedom, but is a very powerful machine that could be potentially dangerous. So, I mean, that's a good point. It's an interesting question.
Especially, I can imagine modifications coming in. If you're going to have competing proprietary navigation software, like different car manufacturers
sure.
have their own software that mm-hmm. they own and control and is not open source, I mean, I can see that being scary.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's even going to be possible, the way that, I mean, because it's all going to have to interact with an infrastructure, with an internet of objects around cities that help cars decide where to go and when to go.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate build-out of the autonomous car goes beyond the autonomous car. It goes into that Internet of Things that we've talked about in the past, this idea that you have sensors and devices that can react to real-time dynamic situations and change based upon that. and that the autonomous car would play a part in this larger system. And in that case, yeah, you might have to require that everyone use at least something that can interface with the larger infrastructure. But then even then, you know, how are you going to build that infrastructure out? Are you going to have it so that every single major metropolitan area has to roll it out at the same time? Because if you don't, one city's infrastructure could be very different from another city's infrastructure.
Yeah, and if I drive from Miami to Atlanta, what happens?
These are some problems that we don't have the answers to yet because we aren't there yet. But again, it's one of those things that we have to think about because it could very well be that as you're getting to the outskirts of a city, your car starts to slow down. And the reason your car is slowing down is because it's actually downloading the latest update it needs to be able to navigate through the next city because it's a totally different operating system. Yeah. That's kind of crazy.
There's so much lag on this road.
Yeah, that's right. It could be like warning, lag ahead. Yeah. We joke about it, but really, unless you have a truly open source approach, or maybe not even open source, just standardized, a standardized approach across all manufacturers and all cities.
Traffic protocol.
Yeah, you're just, yeah, exactly. It would be its own kind of, it would be literally traffic protocol. It would be that kind of a system that would tell cars how to get through certain areas. I mean, it's something that has to be thought about.
So I've got a question that I thought would be interesting.
Hit me, Joe.
If we have autonomous cars, how efficient can we get in terms of all the driving we do? Imagine it's Saturday morning and I've got 6 errands I need to run today.
Okay.
Can my autonomous car solve the traveling salesman problem and figure out what is the most efficient way to get to all 6 of those different places I need to go?
Joe has just posed what is called a non-trivial problem. The traveling salesman problem, for those of you who aren't aware, it's exactly what Joe was saying. The idea is it's a traveling salesman who has to visit, you know, a certain number of cities. And how do you plan out the most efficient route between all those cities and back home so that the traveling salesman spends the least amount of time traveling? And it sounds simple, but as you add destinations, it gets increasingly complex because you have to take into account all the different variations that could occur within that group of stops.
And then we add traffic into the mix.
Yeah, and then you start adding in dynamic elements, and now you've really caused some real...
computer headaches.
Computer headaches, yeah. For a classic computer using a regular processor, the way this works is that the classic computer will work out one set of those variables and come up with an answer, and then it'll go to the next set of those variables, like the next arrangement of those stops. And it will do that for every single variation it can until it's all done, and then it will compare all of those times against each other to determine the right amount, the right version. In which case, what you should do is the Saturday before your Saturday, when you are going to go on these errands, you tell your car what you're going to do in a week and give your car a week to figure it out. And even then, with a classic computer, you're talking about thousands and thousands of hours of computing to come up with these answers, even with the fastest processors we have today. Now, if you were to switch that to a parallel processor, like a graphics processing unit, then you can do lots of calculations in parallel with each other, come up with a bunch of answers at the same time, you know, put those aside and do the next set of parallel calculations, and you really cut down on the amount of time it takes to finish this. But it is a non-trivial problem. So if your car can do it, it means we've reached a level of computing that's so amazing that I'm not really concerned about leaving the house anymore.
Right. What we're saying is that hopefully we'll all have quantum computers on our dashboards
just don't,
in the future.
If you don't look at your car, it will get you to where you're going. Just don't observe your car, because by observing your car, you have changed the route.
Heisenberg's uncertainty car.
That's right. People will ask you, where are you? I'm like, I can tell you how fast I am or where I am, but not both.
And make sure you don't accidentally inspire the car to gain self-awareness.
No, you definitely don't want to do that. Michael. All right, so let's wrap this up, guys. I mean, this is a great, fun discussion to have because, again, we're thinking about the future and what it's going to take for us to get there, and the fact that it's not all technology. Some of this is culturally based. Some of it's policy, you know. So it's fun to really kind of wrap your mind around. Well, we see what the future could be, but how are we going to physically get there.
Mm-hmm.
These are fun discussions to have. So, guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics that we should tackle on Forward Thinking, I recommend you go to our website. It's fwthinking.com. Check it out. We've got blogs there. We've got video series. We've got the podcast. And let us know what you think. What gets you excited about the future? Let us know what we should be talking about next, and we will chat with you really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf-Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.